You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 27th, 2020. And hey, we're just following orders.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alvor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. Whew. And I have been in the trenches.
I was about to say, they called it many things over the years. Nostalgia, shell shock.
Yeah, man, it's rough. We are talking a little bit about a grab bag of sorts brought on by a game that I've been playing lately that, for me, scratches an itch that has not been scratched in a very long time, and that is basically just kind of taking orders and being told what to do in a video game. Maybe there's comfort in it. I don't know. We'll get to that. But I've been playing a game called Postscriptum, Day of Days.
Okay. It's been a long time since... Hey, when I was an academic, World War II is not my specialty, so everyone just back off. But yep. Is Postscriptum, is that a specific reference that I should be getting?
No idea. I never looked it up. I assume that's what PS stands for, right? As in, like, PS, the Germans are coming. We need to get out.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know that, but, like, I don't know if there was a thing in World War II that, for whatever reason, like, I just didn't know if it was an explicit reference to something.
Yeah, if it's, like, a known thing. I honestly have no idea. But there's a lot, honestly, like... So when I've been playing Postscriptum, there are groups that are in the game that take it extremely seriously. Mm. I've been trying to freshen up a bit on my lingo, for example, and people will call out very specifically the types of tanks that they are seeing on enemy lines.
Like, holy crap.
Like, oh, Sherman at 240 West, right? Like, I don't know what a fucking Sherman is. Is there some guy named Sherman over there? Like, what does that mean?
Look out, it's Sherman.
Right, and the game features a bunch of different, like, iconic battles from World War II, and so it's not always just, you know, a classic Americans versus Germans kind of battle. Sometimes you're the British, sometimes you're the French. If you're Germany fighting the French, then you're looking out for different kinds of French infantry, different kinds of French artillery, and you're taking that same thing in mind when you're playing any of the other ones. So there is a certain degree of historical knowledge that would help you in this type of experience, since in a lot of ways it is a simulation of that World War II combat experience.
Is the mechanical significance of a Sherman versus an Abrams, or, you know, whatever tanks that are out there, like, have you found meaningful differences between really knowing how to call them out?
Wow. So last night I was playing a game as Germans against the French, and the French tanks were just taking a beating. And one of the reasons was because our friendly artillery was messing up and firing against the rear of the French artillery's tank. And that was the most heavily armored part of the tank. So we were finding it extremely... We just got fucking slaughtered that game, by the way.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's how historically accurate the events actually were. Probably not. It is the French, after
the Führer is going to be pissed when he hears about this.
But so their tank is different, and we didn't adjust our strategies accordingly. Okay. Right? The same can be said of, say, mortars, right? Mm-hmm. One of... I think it's the British have a four-round... It's called a four or something, and it's a type of mortar that just has way greater distance than any other mortar, right? Mm. So if you know that mortar shells are raining down on your position, there's a certain radius of where you think they might be coming from. And depending on who you're fighting, like, that's going to impact that. And it impacts even the basic level of what the enemies you're fighting look like. Because the game doesn't feature, like, you know, red outlines of your enemies. And even over friendlies, there's, like, a small little blue line if you look at them for a little while. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times you can't tell the difference between your ally and someone off in the distance. Yeah. Like, the pro tip that I got, which I guess is historically accurate, was that Germans were taught to carry their weapons when running in one hand, whereas the British were trained to carry it in two hands.
Oh.
So in those moments, if you see someone running across a field, you can quickly tell whether or not they're friendly or an enemy based on how they're holding their weapon.
It would be so cool if you could determine that, so you could pretend like you were of the enemies, you know? Like,
don't mind me, just see a province with the fields. Yeah, like to get behind enemy lines, that would be tight.
Is that a crumpet? Get him!
Yeah, yeah.
So how has this... It feels like this game, they're saying like this is chapter three, so like there's been some time for a community to form around this game. What's your sense of the mixture of people that are just hardcore into it versus coming to it for the first time? Like, do you find other people, do you find other newbies or greenhorns there?
I mean, I've definitely encountered newbies before. And I've definitely encountered people that are extremely serious about it.
Yeah.
I think right now it fluctuates based upon who's online and the time of day. It is one of the sort of classic PC games where there are servers that are hosted by individual, you know, people and teams, right? There's not a dedicated server anywhere. And so you're joining servers that may have specific rules, or it might be heavily populated by a group of players who all are going in with a sort of tactical realism perspective for their gameplay, in which case you're encountering people that are speaking much more often. On the other hand, I have also played games where no one is on mic, including like my squad leader, for example. And that's actually extremely frustrating and just completely obliterates the joy that I have in the games. So the point where I've started backing out and only joining the servers where I think there are good odds of finding people that are being sort of like historically accurate or taking it seriously and speaking, because the joy for me is not just play a large scale shooter. If that's all I wanted, I would just be playing like, I don't know, Battlefield or any of the Battle Royale games where there's just a ton of action going on at all times, right? I am there to basically fit myself into a structure. And that structure itself, the idea that like people are communicating not just orders, but information in a way that is more realistic to the time, I just find far more interesting. And I know that I sound a little bit like one of those like weird old people who like dresses up and does like Civil War reenactments and stuff. That's like not my bag. And I totally understand that this type of game could really lend itself to, you know, toxic folks role-playing as Nazis. Like, that's not the experience I've had thus far.
Right.
And it's mostly been really positive.
Just logistically, how large are the individual squads that they split you up into?
Yeah. Okay. So here's how the game breaks down, which I think is fascinating, right? The games are generally 80 players with 40 on 40 teams. Every team has different sections, right? The highest of the high is the commander. And the commander has a real body on the battlefield, I believe. I'm pretty certain that's the case. And the commander is basically leading all of the squads. He's leading the entire flow of battle. So they will determine where, you know, vehicles or certain things will drop, and they'll tell people, tell squad leaders where to go. Then each squad is up to 9 players with one squad leader. That squad leader can communicate to all the other squad leaders. So generally speaking, when I'm joining a game, I will spawn in as just a rifleman or maybe a medic, and I will join a squad of 9 or 8 other players, including one squad leader, right?
Okay.
In addition, there's also logistics, which is a whole separate division. They have like separate classes, separate powers, separate obligations, like setting up FOBs, like forward operating bases, to act as spawn points, or to lob mortar fire from long distance, right? That's the logistics team.
Yeah.
The logistics team also has their own squad leaders, and usually those squads are groups of 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the armored division, and these are the players that operate tanks. And every tank is also a squad, usually 3 to 4 individuals with also a squad leader.
All in the tank, right?
All in the tank. Yeah, they're all in the tank. And they're each acting in different roles, right? One is driving, one is firing the tank, one is like up top in a machine gun nest, like looking out. And I haven't played in the armored division at all, but I've watched some YouTube videos and it looks fascinating. It looks like completely like the old military tank style combat that you get out of something like Saving Private Ryan, like tight, clustered, uncomfortable. You don't have a lot of vision. You could totally see how one individual could sort of sneak up and take on a tank, you know?
Right.
So that's how the overall hierarchy is set up. But then of course there's also different roles within your squad that are pivotal to your success as a squad and as a team, right? So when you have 9 players in your squad, it unlocks certain classes, including the anti-tank class. So there are people that have TNT where they will sneak up to a tank, place it on it, and then get out of dodge. Or they'll fire like a rocket launcher to take out tanks. there's a radio man, and the radio man has like binoculars and can be near the squad leader to set up little tents to that and then act as spawn points. And so depending on what class you are, you also have certain roles and responsibilities, right? I've been getting a lot of enjoyment out of playing as a medic. Medics have way more bandages and the ability to revive fallen teammates, or rather they have more stims to do so. Most riflemen just start with one. And as a medic, you know, you want to be up in the fray, but you also at times want to hang back, right? Because you want to be the one to go in and revive enemies who first encountered enemy infantry. And there are times when, you know, I'm just throwing smoke to create a fog cloud so that I can then go in hands and knees, just like crawling over the grass to just, you know, revive my fallen comrades and stuff. And you hear people crawl out on mic because there's also local chat, like, medic, oh God, it hurts. You know, like, I mean, kind of horrible stuff. But at the same time, yeah, I think it really adds to the immersion that that sort of hierarchical, multifaceted multiplayer system creates.
How do they determine who gets to be the overall commander?
So the commander, I believe, is a position that you opt into. So as soon as the round starts, you can choose to be a commander. However, I do believe the squad leaders can vote to kick you if they think you're being a bad commander.
They can frag you.
Yeah, and I've been in a lot of games where there's no commander at all because like that role is just really exhaustive, where people will go in and then come out.
Right.
And the same as goes with squad leader. So generally speaking, you choose, you know, start a squad. I don't think you can vote to kick your squad leaders, unfortunately. And then you can join that squad and you can always leave if you're like, oh, my squad leader's an idiot, and go to a different squad.
That's the thing that is, I mean, we were discussing this before, but creating a hierarchy or even just creating any sort of organizational team with different roles, period. I mean, that's hard in the best of circumstances, let alone a video game where you don't know the people you're playing with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know it's hard from games that don't have that system at all, right? Yeah. Like, how many times playing Overwatch or Destiny multiplayer, you would want to try to coordinate with the team, and half of them were not on mics, or half of them didn't care, or half of them wanted to play Hanzo, you know? Yeah. Like, who knows, right? Like, there's all kinds of opportunities for you to be more tactical. You know, I've dabbled a little bit in Rainbow Six. I'm terrible at it, but every time that I've played, it's a grab bag, right? Do you find a group of people that really want to be communicative and share information and approach it tactically, where it feels like someone is taking that lead? Or do you want an experience where just every man for himself, team deathmatch, go to town, right? I think we can all agree, like, the most fun I've had in multiplayer shooters is playing them with friends who are all talking. And we might not be sharing bad information, but I really think that adding a sense of Someone, at least one person knows what they're talking about, and two, can help lead the team is so invaluable, you know?
Yeah. I thought about that, like, from even playing something like League of Legends or Dota or, you know, HOTS or whatever, where, again, because no one is designated, you need to have this weird thing where you have you have someone that wants to take control, but you also have some people that want to cede control for the betterment of the team.
Yep.
And all of that, without any formal structure in place, you're just set up as you're just set up to do it by consensus versus like nudging people towards a role. Whereas at least in a game like this, there's a mechanic, even if it's a light mechanic, where, hey, you're an infantry guy. Like, you shouldn't be healing people. You should be shooting. You know, like there's a class suggestion to it that you don't often get in games that would still, even if those games would benefit from coordination, the roles aren't explicit enough to nudge people as much.
For sure. There's also something about when you make a game of that scale. I mean, I guess this is true of even small scale games though, right? Oftentimes when you're in the heat of battle, it's very difficult to make a wise decision or an informed decision, right? In Postscriptum, it might happen because we're being shelled, or I'm getting gunfire from the west, or, you know, I hear a tank coming in, I'm trying to hide, right? You know, there's all sorts of decisions that are really difficult to do in the heat of battle. If I see three guys and I'm trying to shoot at them, to then also think in my mind, I need to communicate to my squad leader that I'm firing on enemies west 240 in grid H6, whatever, right? Like, that's not easy to do. And that's true in League of Legends as well, right? Like, if I'm in the heat of battle in like a skirmish, all kinds of bad decisions are likely to go down because, I'm an old dude. Like, I'm just not as sharp and quick on my feet anymore.
Yeah.
And I'll make rash decisions, right? The value that you get by having someone tell you, you need to go over here and make this decision, even if you die on the way,
yeah,
is in a way, like, really freeing, right? Like, yeah. I feel like, you know, there are times I was playing earlier today before we were recording, and I was defending a point that I thought was important. I had a vantage point up on this tower, and I got some kills. I was like, this is great. And I hear my squad leader say, hey, we need to, squad one needs our help. We need to move north to take this spot. And then he marks somewhere on the map, right? Mm-hmm. In a normal game, my gut check would be, I'm going to stay put, dude. I got a sweet nest. I'm getting some kills. Yeah, like, I'm going to climb those stats, right? But in my mind, I'm like, oh, I need to do what I'm fucking told, right? Like, this is a hierarchy. I need to listen to this person, even if I'm giving up a spot that I thought was really cool, because he has information that I don't have. You know, like, the commander, the squad leaders, they're talking to one another. They know what's going down. They know whether or not, you know, we're going to get cover on our way there, right? And yes. I can put that trust on someone else, and it sort of frees me from the burden of analysis paralysis that can happen when you're in the heat of battle.
Yeah. Do you know if the game is keeping track of compliance at all, of you playing your role or you giving good?
No, not even a little bit. I mean, at the end, so...
so it's fully community-driven, basically.
It's fully community-driven, yes. So, I mean, there are stats that they're tracking, right? Like, they will track how many revives you get, how many heals. They do track your kills, but interestingly, they do not show you your kills until the end of battle. So you never know how many kills you got. So there's not this feedback loop of, like, I'm on a fucking killing spree. I'm, you know...
Right.
So there's that. But yeah, beyond that, not really. Like, you could theoretically just go rogue and do whatever you want, but you're probably going to lose. You know, right. You're not going to be as good. And I think if the game is designed well, and I think it's actually technically in early access right now, so it's still in the process of being developed. If it's designed well, it's going to reward the players that sort of do what they're told, right? As long as they have a good squad leader. But I don't know. You know, I think sort of sometimes to, like, work decisions, right? There are times where sometimes... if you're the employee, you got to just do what you're told, even if you think it's a bad idea, right? And there are times where sometimes that has happened in my career. And usually my thought is, as long as I feel like I've voiced my discontent or voiced my concern about a certain action or recommended an alternative or provided some data that I thought would be helpful, I'm okay doing things just because I'm told to do them, you know? Because at least then you learn from it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of an experience that you don't get unless you have a hierarchical system in a game where someone can sort of tell you you need to go do something. And even if it's the wrong call, well, at least you didn't. You learned something about it, you know? And there's like a sort of trickle-up system as you and your entire squad are getting better.
Well, and it's also, whether it's in this game or whether it's just in life, a lot of it is a numbers game where... you're not going to agree with every decision that's being made, but if you were to fight every decision that was being made, then nothing could ever get done. So you have to understand when is the time to follow orders versus when is the time to bring your opinion, which is an interesting thing for a video game specifically, because usually the player is meant to make every decision for themselves whenever they want, all the time.
Totally. And I should say there are a lot of mechanics that have been built in that reward you sticking around your allies, right? This game is functionally one shot, one kill. Like, if you get shot with a rifle, you're down, right? You might not be dead, though. And so if a medic is nearby, someone can crawl over and heal you. If you're just going rogue, like, I'm just, slowly firing your, like, Car 98, that's like bolt action, right?
Right.
Like, then you're going to die and you're not going to be able to be picked up.
Yeah.
There's also a mechanic of what is it called when you're firing on an enemy to sort of jar them?
Suppressive fire.
So there's a suppression system, right? And if I'm firing suppression fire on an enemy positioned, say, like to our west, and you're with me, right? Their ability to shoot back is clouded because every bullet that I fire shakes their screen a little bit. It makes it dark. They know that they're under fire, right? So if there's four of us and two of us are laying down suppression fire, you can make an approach far more comfortably, right? And I can throw smokes in your way. Like, I can really set you up for success. If you're going rogue and you're not listening to what your squad leader is saying and you're not acting as a team, you are as though you're going, I mean, you are doing exactly what you think you're doing. You're going in solo, and it's just fucking suicide when you're playing a game that like has that, that, you know, deadliness and systems that sort of add value to having a whole squad.
I'm trying to think of any other games that approach it in a similar way. I feel like at a certain point, do you remember that game called MAG, Massive Action Game?
No, I mean, it faintly rings a bell.
There was a game, I believe it was a PS3 game that was, well, I mean, it was a massive action game. It was, you know, it was dozens of players. They split up into squads, but I think there was some sort of mechanical incentive around if you gave good orders and people followed them, they would reward you. But
pats on the head.
I don't even know what it was, but it was one of those things where they had to split you up into squads. You know, it was like a 40-on-40 battle. This is amazing. It's massive. But it got to the point where your squad, it functionally became a 4v4 at any given time because, you know, your squad was just fighting other squads in like pockets of the map. And it was still flat within the team. You know, it was just squads of people that had guns and were shooting. It wasn't, hey, here's our tank guys. It wasn't a class-based system in a strict sense, like Postscriptum, which I think probably helps it with the authority model, because if you truly have very, very different roles and very, very different abilities, then I think it kind of snaps you into playing a role a little bit better than if you just have to do it and differentiate yourself by actions versus just mechanics.
Because you think that you like the differentiate yourself by action versus the mechanics?
Well, I mean, I think I'm not saying I like it or dislike it. I'm saying I think it is easier. I would argue that it's probably easier to facilitate a hierarchical experience if you actually limit people's actions based on class, because then they can't go all Rambo if you're a medic because you don't have the right gun or you don't have the right skill or what have you.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's definitely true, right? Like, depending on what class you play in Postscriptum, you just straight have a completely different gun. Like, you have a totally different kit. And there's a limit to how many medics you can have too, right? Like, you can't just have a squad full of medics.
Right,
I mean, my other thought was a game that I've mentioned several times on the podcast, but Natural Selection, which is the alien first-person shooter, aliens versus marines, functionally, right? Usually it's come up in conversation because it's asymmetric, but there's also a commander role in that game for both teams. Like, there's an alien hive, and there's a guy that all they do is just sit inside of, like, a metal cage or sit inside of their hive and produce sort of resources along the map and direct people on where to go. Right. And depending on how you're behaving and how you're getting that, you know, executing on those orders, it'll change the flow of battle and where you're being set up. I think the thing that lends itself really well for that, and is kind of necessary, I think, for a lot of games like these, is limiting information. Because if you have to rely on information from someone, then you need to sort of recognize them within this hierarchical position, right?
Yeah.
I can't waste my time asking my commander in Natural Selection, why do you think I should go down the southern corridor?
Right, like,
that's ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
I know that he has information that I don't have. So when he says, I need you to go and fucking set up some energy probes or whatever in the southern corridor, I'm going to fucking go because he's telling me this information that I don't have full access to. And being able to divvy out that information, and I think really helps in that regard as well, because, you know, if I go to the South Quarter and I die, but I've done my little part, and then 5 minutes later, I see a fucking behemoth just walk through the hall, you know, I know, hey, I did my part, you know, right. I contribute a little bit towards like that guy becoming like a beast of an alien or whatever. I think the same, it's harder to feel in Postscriptum because the game is such a large scale, or this is even true of something that also had a commander mode, like Battlefield 2142 or 2140 or whatever, the sci-fi Battlefield game.
Yeah.
But I think when the world is that large, it's more difficult to see how you've contributed.
Yes.
But I think if you're checking the map and you're seeing how your squads are doing, or, you know, this is especially true if, say, in Postscriptum, our squad is tasked with taking out an enemy tank or taking out an enemy forward operating base, right? Mm-hmm. When that base blows up, when that tank explodes, it's a victory. You know, everyone shouts it out. They're like, hell yeah, we did it, boys, and let's move on to the next task, right? Mm-hmm. And it feels like you're making that climb. You know, you're making that progress towards your goal.
I wonder if there is a... if there's like a correlation between the size of the team and the size of the team you're playing against. You know, we were talking about Artemis, the bridge simulator, the faux Star Trek thing, where you're basically playing against the computer, but your interaction is there's a bridge. It's a very small group of people, but your interaction has to be constant with each other.
Right.
And for those that haven't seen it or played it, it's a small scale multiplayer game, except that you're on a crew of a Star Trek like ship where someone pilots the ship, someone operates the weapons, someone operates the comms, someone is just the captain giving orders, but you have to constantly be, to your point, you have to constantly be communicating because no one person has all the info.
Yeah. Man, now that I'm four seasons deep into Star Trek TNG, I want to play that game so bad. I don't know, man. Maybe it's just my personality, but I just love the idea of doing a small piece of a larger pie. You know, like filling a role is just satisfying to me. I think it makes me a good employee, by the way. So if anyone's listening,
so anyway, like, yeah, if I'm ever on the market again.
the Artemis idea, I still think that would scratch that same itch for me, even if I'm not against real people or a huge threat, right? Because for me, part of it is just feeling like I'm part of a team and I'm being recognized for doing my small effort, right?
Yes.
And there's I think part of it is it creates this bond of trust, right? Like I have to rely upon my squad leader and my squad leader relies upon me. Yeah. In the same way that if I'm operating the photon torpedoes, right? And my captain says, fire photon torpedoes at X target or whatever.
Right.
I need to fire those fucking torpedoes. Like, I need to do my job. In the same way that, you know, the person that is positioning us so that I can fire my torpedoes in the first place also has to do their job.
Right.
You know? And if you work as a team, if it feels... And this also, I think in real life, lends itself to a lot of internal conflict, right? Mm-hmm. I think in the workplace, this is a major problem all the time, right? Because you're only as strong as your weakest link.
Yeah.
And it's difficult sometimes not to call out your weakest link as, in fact, the weakest link. But I think if you are all strong together, it feels just fucking great, you know, to feel like you're just killing it as a team.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't watched the documentary yet, but it makes me think about the Michael Jordan effect. You know, what is the... If you're playing Postscriptum, have you ever been on a squad or or just an overall team where you have a Michael Jordan, where someone is just so much better than everyone else?
Yep.
And how does that person integrate with the team and integrate into the hierarchy?
Oh, 100%. I mean, my experience with my best experiences with Postscriptum are with squad leaders and maybe say 2 to 3 other infantrymen in the squad that are almost fully immersed, you know, like they're giving out orders. They're telling where they're going to go. You know, at one point we got into a truck. It was like a convoy because we were headed to line and someone was like, is that a German? And it was like a German, like maybe, you know, 100 meters away.
Mm.
And then the squad leader is like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's a German. And he just wheels the vehicle over and runs that guy over. Right. And then we like all started laughing or whatever. And then we, you know, went to our destination. But that story that was told, right, was one in which like these individuals set the correct scene. Or actually, you know what? Here's a better example. Postscriptum recently launched the Utah Beach event, right? Mm-hmm. Or map, where as the US, you're invading forces on those fucking shitty boats, right?
Yeah.
And just like any World War II movie, if you've ever seen one that has depicted Utah Beach, it is a fucking slaughter. Like it is ugly. Like you will die over and over and over again trying to get off the boats.
Right.
It is a success if you can get off both your smoke grenades before just being mowed down, right? So right. I was playing in a game and it was me, two other guys, the squad leader and the radio man, which are the two people that you need to create a rally point, like another spawn point further up. And our whole squad is like running down the beach and we all just start getting mowed down. and just like badass, like this one radio man and the squad leader are like inching up. I'm inching up and like shooting back and throwing smokes. And like we basically all die except for the two people that needed to survive. And they, because they were just fucking badass and moved like, you know, hundreds of yards up the beach, were able to create, you know, another head for us to attack from.
Right.
And that story is amazing because it's one where the squad leader is telling us what to do and knowing that we're all going to die to get him like, you know, several feet more forward. It's just so compelling. And it makes me want to not only just go back and play more Postscriptum, but it makes me want to be better, right? It makes me want to feel like I know what I'm doing. It makes me want to scan the horizon and you know, lay down suppressive fire. It is not exciting to say, man, I can't wait to get into fucking Call of Duty and lay down suppressive fire, you know? No, you go, right. you a lot of times you play shooters to get kills, right? But I think when you feel like you've got a few people, when you've got your Michael Jordans, the people that make you want to be better, I think it feels more rewarding to then execute in smaller, littler ways because you know that that person is carrying to the finish line, right? Like that dude's going to dunk it.
Right. I wonder if there is a dynamic in that game where the people that are the best tactical players are not actually the best squad leaders because, there's many, many examples in sports where the best players in the league never go on to coaching or they never get into it and some people's theory is that they're just so good that they're operating on a level that is actually hard to teach. And they're frustrated when people can't operate on that level versus kind of consultative, someone had to focus their skills versus like harness this raw talent. And I wonder if there's a space to recognize those folks where I feel this way in normal multiplayer games all the time, where as the years have gone on, I've gotten mechanically worse and worse at shooters just because I don't play them as much and I'm older and my reflexes are worse. But I feel like I've never been better at understanding the flow of a battle where it's like, if we can take this checkpoint, then all of a sudden the dominoes will start falling. But you guys just need to get on the fucking point, you know, like believe me, you know, this will like,
dude, you should play Postscriptum squad leader, Scott.
But I mean, there's a certain dynamic to, we can't afford to have you as the squad leader because you're too valuable in the battle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's totally accurate. Like when you were describing this, I was trying to imagine, you know, how do you build your perfect squad of 9 players?
Yeah. Right?
You want a couple people that are the Twitch, Reflex, I play a lot of CSGO players, right?
Right.
You want them to be on your front line. You want them to spot the tiniest little movement and fire back, right? But your radio man, like you want that person to be the person that is, you know, plays a lot of, I don't know, Rainbow Six Siege, where they are used to relaying information to the rest of the squad, like the people that are shot callers.
We got to get a Microsoft Flight Simulator air traffic controller to.
I mean, for sure, right? Or like, you want people like me who's just like, I'm bad at shooting, but I will fucking throw smoke grenades and I will crawl my ass way over to heal my friends, right? Like, you need that whole gang. Like, if I were creating a perfect draft by selecting other games, right? A couple of Rainbow Six players, a couple of CSGO players, probably a fucking, like, a real-time strategy game player, like someone who's used to, you know, StarCraft.
Seeing the map and seeing 3 moves ahead.
Well, and someone has to be the commander over the entire battle, right?
Yeah.
Like, that person is a very different person. And maybe, in fact, that person would be a bad squad leader because they're not very good at leading a small group of players in this very tactical way. But maybe they're that high-level tactics way, right?
Right.
In the same way that the people that play a lot of Rainbow could be the people that are the tactical players that can siege and take pivotal points, right? If you say, hey, I need you two guys to go clear that house because we need to keep moving to take on a tank or whatever, right?
Yes.
Then you need to trust those two guys to do that job, right? And if it's me, good luck. We've already lost. It's a suicide mission. It's over, right? But if it's people that I think are more honed and skilled at that, then great. And I think in Postscriptum, it's interesting that you have a whole squad that's logistics. Like, they barely see battle, you know? They're literally just digging trenches and shit. It sounds like horribly boring, but there's a place for that type of player in a game like this. And I think being able to figure out, well, what type of player am I and where do I fit into this like larger battle? It's just super interesting. And it's kind of, in a weird way, it's kind of a weirdly welcoming and accessible game, even if it's about a very niche World War II simulation style game. Mm-hmm. In terms of what it's offering to players, these types of games that have broken out classes and hierarchical systems and different ways to contribute, I think are probably some of the more accessible games conversely.
Before we end, do you see some, because these games, there are certain times games just, they chart a little thread through the video game playing.
A trench, if you will.
They set up, they hunker down in a trench through the community. Mm-hmm. And get a really dedicated following, and then you start to see small influences here and there. Do you think that there is anything that, you know, let's fast forward 2 or 3 years, like, is there something that could be included in a Battlefield or Battlefront or hell, even Call of Duty that could be inspired by this game?
You know, I think the time has kind of come and gone, to be honest. Mm. I think that there was a brief window, right, where class-based multiplayer shooters were the heyday. And those effects, they're not gone, right? They still make up a good deal of the shooters that we play. Overwatch is still alive and well.
Yep.
But I think there was a brief moment where we thought, oh, everything is going to be class-based. And I think that's one of the easiest lessons to pull from a game like Postscriptum.
Right.
The battle royale genre has, like, interestingly sort of shuffled that up, right?
Yeah.
Where it's class-based, but it's not hierarchical. It's not like, oh, you play a role, and I play a role, and together I give order. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't really carry over, per se.
Yeah.
And there have been experiments in this, right? Natural selection is one of them. There's other, you know, apparently there's a long history of games like Postscriptum. Squads is another one. Like, there's games like this out there. So I think that if there was going to be a sort of significant push from a game like this into the shooters that we normally talk about on a show like this, I think it would have happened by now, to be honest.
So this is just kind of a niche laboratory versus something that is necessarily going to influence until there's like a big sea change, until for whatever reason people get truly tired of Fortnite, you know?
I mean, what I will say, like, I think games like this will always be niche. I think if anything, games like this could take a lesson from games that don't have class-based systems and think about other ways of adding value to your squad, right?
Right.
I think logistics and the armored tank division, like, all that stuff is super interesting because it's not just class, it's also divisions, you know? Like, it's a larger divide, for, I guess, a redundant word choice there, to break out your large squad. But what I will say is I think that, you know, better internet, more people playing online, you know, but more realistic worlds. Postscriptum is a game that's made by the developers called Periscope Games, and it's literally 12 people, right?
Mm.
The ability to make a game of this scale and this complexity, I think, is easier now more than ever. So if anything, maybe there's a chance that it's more discoverable.
Right.
I'm certainly surprised that I discovered it. I think I bumped into a YouTube video and was like, oh, that's interesting, and saw it on sale, and that was it. But honestly, I'm really enjoying it. I love that idea of being able to slot into that larger hole, you know? And I really don't think that there's too many games out now, certainly not like hugely popular ones, that are that in-depth with it.
People just need that militaristic discipline.
They do, dude. Like, just get in line, you know? Go to boot camp.
Follow
orders. Part of it, too, is how many people want to follow orders, though?
You know? I guess,
like,
that's true.
That's the other thing. It's like, and I get it. Sometimes you just want to, like, go in guns blazing and don't want to be told what to do. And look, a lot of us, you know, we all work day jobs. We're told what to do day in and day out.
I
understand it's not everyone's fantasy to come home and boot it up and have some other guy randomly tell you what to do. You know, like, that might not be your sense of enjoyment. But for me, I'm loving it.
I think it's fascinating. I mean, the getting humans to cooperate period is fascinating, and getting humans to cooperate in a forum that they have no obligation to cooperate in is even more so. So I think this stuff is super interesting. I hope that this stuff winds its way into some of the more mainstream things here and there, because I think it's a cool experiment, and hopefully you do get to see some of that stuff.
I'm also curious to see how well ideas like this can transfer outside of the historical simulator, because Postscriptum is World War II, and I think your natural inclination is to role play of, like, oh god, I'm in the trenches, medic, right? Like, if it were space, would it do that? I don't know, you know.
Yeah, could they do this in Battlefront, where you could have a Jedi basically giving you, and you're like, fucking Jedis think they know everything.
I mean, I would love that, dude. Or like, imagine it's like an alien game, right?
Yeah.
And you're all members, and you've got like someone telling you where the fucking xenomorphs are. Like that, imagining this in other worlds is so exciting to me. Like, I would love this in Lord of the Rings. Like, fucking, I want Aragorn to tell me where to, you know, move my hobbit ass. Like, that shit would be sweet.
If it was an Aliens one, I would demand a hotkey button that just let me shout, game over, man, game over. But like,
well, they probably shout it every time you die.
All right, we shall leave it there. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our HQ. We're broadcasting daily with our radio man, Stitcher, iTunes. You can find all of our past episodes. Tell a friend.
Cool. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time.